Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We definitely have a lot for you today, and it's all substantive, and it all is relative and relates to what's going on. But before I jump into all of that, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that really talks about the solution in getting the government out of our lives and back into the framework of the Constitution. That starting with the federal government and then jumping to the states. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And so if I can just leap on forward, I'll just grovel real quick because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because I'm kind of believing I may run out of time today. But if you are looking for an opportunity to help, check out constitutionclub.ning.com and or just send me an email and I will kind of help you through this. Wait till you see what goes on in 2019. I believe you'll start getting motivated because I've been trying to give you all the marketing necessary because there are several reasons why we all need to take action now. But because it's really tricky. I mean, I'm not overwhelmed by the emails I get and what have you. So I'm not overtaxed in helping and getting people started with the few people that we've gotten. And so the matter of fact is that I believe it's going to really, not even I believe, it is going to step up. And I'm hoping that when 2019 starts, I'll be able to engage with you because I'm hoping and I'm planning on actually engaging with a few state legislators and so forth, but we still need everybody's help in every other state to start getting this started. I mean, this is not a serial process that we have to do it here, and then we go here, and then we go here. We need all 50 states, or at least efforts, as many states as we possibly can, to get started at once. And so wait till 2019, wait till Congress becomes obstructionist, and wait till they start trying to cling on to policies that actually Trump is trying to get rid of. And oh, by the way, you got to remember that the president doesn't have legislative powers. He only can faithfully execute the laws. It is Congress that makes the laws. And even though they can't make any laws, here comes the problem. If Trump has been getting rid of legislations through bureaucracies and not using Congress to giving them repealed laws or actually repealing the laws themselves, then he's stuck because if Congress comes in and those laws are still on the books, they will, like I told you, if you don't do these things right, then the next set of progressives are going to come right back in and implement them just like that. And before you know it, they're on steroids growing and infecting our lives even more. So with that good news, I actually did check the news today and I scanned around and I could not find any sign whatsoever that the federal government is getting rid of any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So obviously, if they're not going to do it, who will do it? And I'm hoping that you're going to join me because I'm doing it and I can't do it by myself. I may have a finger like the Dutch boy and I can put it into one little hole and stop that. But there's a lot more and there's a lot bigger holes than my finger or anybody's finger can fix. We need to get it all fixed and it's going to take all of us. But I want to plow forward. As I've been telling you, tomorrow is going to be a very special program because I'm going to actually go through the paradigm of the framers and give you, I believe, what is relevant for us to start looking and focusing on our Thanksgiving and how we remember our nation's Thanksgiving or how we should be remembering our nation's Thanksgiving. So you definitely want to tune in so that you can at least get that paradigm, and hopefully it'll be early enough before Thanksgiving, but close enough to, you know, keep it in the forefront of your mind and give you maybe some motivation in adapting to some new traditions and new paradigms. How's that? So are you steamed? Are you really letting this election crap get to you? I'm telling you, this is what you need to hear, because I know you want to hear this. It's all going to be good. It's all going to be better. Everything is going to get fixed because they've got this magic potion that they'll be able to apply. It's like this. It's like a bomb on Seinfeld. It just, you know, heals things. It's magical. And so if you can't catch the sardonic tone, I'm going to go back to what I was saying. The fact is that nothing's going to get better until we take the action. And if we take the action by using the Constitution, and more importantly, using it as a weapon and as our shield, so for our offense and defense, we will be able to actually fix these things. States will no longer be able to undermine our republic by allowing these types of atrocities to occur. This goes hand in hand with why I've been focused since the very beginning of this show on Wyoming and the very dark red states. I've asked you, and I appreciate those who've contributed and those who've gotten involved, but I've been asking, and I'm going to tell you, if we don't get these dark red states across the line and getting them convinced and helping them understand what they can do and the authority that they have and how they can get this started, what hope do you have in your state, in your purple state or your blue state? There is none. Because if the red states don't start standing up, if we can't get one David to stand up against Goliath and create a rippling of courage to going through the rest of the red states, getting Wyoming and then Dakotas and Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, Idaho, Montana, and so forth. If we don't do that, if we can't focus and start helping them, and I'm going to tell you, that's why I asked, every day I asked people to contribute money to those who were dedicated to supporting and protecting all of us from federal tyranny. And so that's why it's so important. I understand that you really want to get your guy in, but in the grand scheme of things, I can tell you, they got good guys in Washington, and they got good guys in all of these purple states, but they can't do anything, and they won't do anything because their hands are tied. We have to get the red states to lead. We have to actually get the red states to step up and actually start taking action, kicking butt, taking names, and you will actually see that the people in the purple states will start waking up, and it'll actually give hope to the voters in your states and help them rally and focus on the Constitution. It's pretty simple. It's not rocket science. At least I don't think it's rocket science. I will also say this. If you didn't think it was bad in New York for, you know, literally electing an activist communist and knowing that the taxes are going to go up, I don't know if you heard, but it looks like PG&E is once again responsible for some of these fires. And oh, guess what? It seems like the insurance isn't going to pay for it. I'm going to tell you this. The federal government should not be bailing out any of these types of things, whether it's the hurricanes, it doesn't matter. They have no constitutional authority to doing this. So what this means is now California has to figure out how they're going to spend money. Are they going to pay back those who were literally victims of these fires and so forth? Or are they going to actually keep on giving away their state to the illegals so that they can keep in power? And it's a sad day, but California is going down literally in flames and ashes. And it's not getting any better, especially with the fact that the news that came out today, it looks like the underwriter for PG&E is not, and that's their public gas and electric, right? And so they're going to be the bearer of bad news, and the taxpayers are going to be hit very, very hard. Now, as I have been saying, And as a matter of fact, for those of you who tuned in yesterday or those who missed it yesterday, at the end of the show, I read the George Nicholas quote, the citation out of the Virginia ratification debates. Sorry, I'm a little sleep deprived here. But anyway, I read that citation, why the common law wasn't dictated and why the Constitution did not dictate the laws of the land for criminal and those types of processes. Those were left to the enjoyment of the states to choose for themselves. And so, as I've been saying, though, that the Department of Justice is unconstitutional. These are not just my words. When the federal government passed by an act new laws that defined crimes and punishments in 1798, let me read to you what Jefferson said. So here we go. This is what Jefferson said in the Kentucky Resolution. Resolved that the Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason. So he's auditing the Constitution and telling the other states the only crimes that the federal government has cognizance over. And he goes on and says, power to punish treason, counterfeiting the securities and coin and the current coin of the United States, piracy and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. Now let me be clear here. Those last two are actually acts that occur outside of the United States. They're either on the high seas or they're in foreign lands and territories where the U.S. does not have jurisdiction and cognizance. So I will be right back after this so I can get into the rest of this, because you're going to love this. And it'll prove my point that the Department of Justice is unconstitutional. We'll be right back after this. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And as I was just starting off with this, with the citation from Jefferson and the Kentucky legislators, I was literally identifying the fact that here Jefferson is talking about the only crimes that the federal government has jurisdiction over. And so that would be, again, treason, counterfeiting, and that would be counterfeiting securities and the current coin or the coinage of the United States, piracy and felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses. So Literally, it's only treason and counterfeiting within the United States that they have cognizance over. They don't have cognizance over speech and hate crimes and marriage and anything like that. And so I will go on, and he says, where was I? Okay, so whatsoever. And it being true as a general principle and one of the amendments to the Constitution, having also declared that, and he's pointing out the 10th Amendment here, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, not prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Therefore, the act of Congress passed on the 14th day of July, 1798, entitled An Act in Addition, and the act entitled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States, as also the act passed by them on the day of June, 1798, entitled An Act to Punish Frauds Committed on the Bank of the United States, and all other acts which assume to create, define, or punish crimes other than those so enumerated in the Constitution, are altogether void and of no force, and that the power to create, define, and punish such other crimes is reserved and of right appertains solely and exclusively to the respective states, each within its own territory. Now, so the question I have is here, is Jefferson lying, or are we actually being duped by what we're hearing in the news and from the professors and what we hear from the government? Oh, yeah, we can do anything and everything we need to do. Who's lying, right? Keep that in mind here. Now, this is Madison, because not only did Jefferson articulate these facts, Madison did the exact same thing a couple of months later. So Jefferson's resolution was in October. It was literally just a few months past the passing of that act, with Adams signing it. And so Jefferson gets on his horse, rides to Kentucky, does that, and then Madison goes down to Virginia to respond to Kentucky's resolution. And this is what Madison says: that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. So here's Madison basically saying that if you're going to violate the Constitution, because he points out that they are limited by the enumerated powers. This has been the consistent song, my friends, throughout the ratification debates, the Federalist Papers, and even though the Federalist Papers are just really good guidance, they did assist a little bit in helping persuade the people to demand for the ratification. These ratification debates and these statements are literally official statements that you have to take in merit to the Constitution. Madison goes on and says that the General Assembly doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has a sundry or a variety instances been manifested by the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced construction of the constitutional charter which defines them, and the implications have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases which have been copied from the very limited grant of power in the former Articles of Confederation, were the less liable to be misconstrued, so as to destroy the meaning and effect of the particular enumeration which necessarily explains the limits, the general phrases, and so as to consolidate the states by degrees into one sovereignty, the obvious tendencies and inevitable consequence of which would be to transform the present republican system of the United States into an absolute or at best a mixed a monarchy. And so he's actually pointing out the dangers of what these guys are doing is pushing us towards a monarchy. And actually, they didn't understand communism as a government. But that's where we are today. And so the reason why I'm pointing this out is literally you have to understand, you need to get this, that just because the federal government is doing it doesn't mean that it's legal, it's legit, or anything else. It is a house of cards. I've been telling you this and I've been telling you this. So as we understand this now, right, let me move into a different spectrum, because I believe that, because I've been harping on this for a long time, that the press is not protected by state governments. And so if you understand the Bill of Rights, and I've done this before, but I want to do this again because you really need to understand this. The federal government is constrained in ensuring that the press is free, but that doesn't mean the journalists. So there's no reason why CNN can't send somebody or some other flunky into the White House presses. They can bar people for bad behavior and so forth. That is within their rights. That doesn't mean that they're constraining the press or what they have to say or anything like that. This is not a First Amendment issue. This is a behavioral issue on Acosta's part. But I want to drill into this. The preamble to the Bill of Rights states this: the conventions of a number of states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstructions or abuse of its power that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Now, what that just said was that the states demanded that they have more restrictions on the federal government. The Bill of Rights were restrictions on the federal government. When Madison was pursuing the Bill of Rights, he pointed out that many of the states didn't have any of these protections for their people. Why is it that they needed it for the federal government? I mean, he was pretty emphatic during the ratification debates that he says none of these states have these things. As a matter of fact, I don't think any of the states had the right to bear arms. I don't think any of the states, but that's because maybe lackadaisical or what have you, they were kind of really relying upon the rights of Englishmen as well as this Confederation, the Articles of Confederation and so forth. But the fact of the matter is the states were lackadaisical. And so that goes back to the sleight of hand I've been telling people that I truly see Hamilton understanding a lot of these things. He was a very brilliant man, and he was one that easily found and exploited back doors that were literally unconstitutional. But the point is that every time he pointed to something, he used his, you know, like he scoffed at it, or he made recommendations with a sleight of hand. And I truly believe that when he said that the states need to set up barriers, I think he knew that the states would be inept and not be able to do that, because they never did. And that's one of the reasons why we're in this problem. So consequently, the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights only applies to the general government, as I've been saying. After the Civil War, the 14th Amendment applied parts of the Bill of Rights to the states. The pertinent clause of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment states, "No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States." What this states, or what this is asserting, is that portions of the Constitution, as it is ratified in the amendments, such as the Bill of Rights, that pertain to one's privileges and immunities, cannot be abridged or taken away. There are two things of importance here, and that is, one, the Establishment Clause, which is in the First Amendment. That is an organizational privilege or immunity. It is not an individual privilege of a citizen. It is organizational in nature. And so this protection, it only applies to the federal government. states can pass laws, and actually at the time they did have established churches. There were three out of the original 13 colonies, I believe, at the beginning of the Civil War, and I think two at the time of the signing of the 14th Amendment or the forced ratification, however you want to look at it. But the point is, and this is why this is really important, there were other states that were formed that still had religions as well. All the states ended up going into a non-denominational and then ended up converting into secularism. But as I look at the clock, I don't have time to finish this, so I'm going to have to bridge this over our hard break so that I can get into why this is important. Because as I was saying, states actually had established churches, and they could actually, there's nothing in the Constitution that keeps them from doing that, and unless the states have passed their own constitutional amendments in doing that and keeping themselves from establishing a church. So we will be right back and exploring this a little bit more after this break. I'll be right back. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So the two things of importance, I'll go over this again. The two things that are important regarding this, just for example purposes, because there's a few other things that we could pull out of this from the 14th Amendment. But the two I really want to point out, and one of them, as I've already talked about, is the Establishment Clause. And this, again, is an organization, so the privileges or immunities are not applied to the state. Because the 14th Amendment, and the whole purpose of the 14th Amendment was to protect the freemen. It wasn't to protect the organizational freemen, because there was no such thing. It was literally the individual privileges and immunities that all citizens were enjoying to ensure that the freemen had those exact same protections. And so that's why the Establishment Clause is not applied to the states. It's only applied to the general government. Another part of the Bill of Rights that does not apply to the states is also in the First Amendment, stating that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedoms of the press. Now, I've kind of cut things together there, but that's exactly how it would read if you removed all the other listed freedoms and so forth. And so the states, literally, because what is the press? Is the press an individual? No, that's a journalist. The press is a newspaper. It's an organization. It is not an individual. And literally, the federal government cannot in any form create any laws that are abridging the freedom of the press by being able to print or state anything they wanted to state. However, states can reel in their press and hold them accountable. Now, it wouldn't be good and it would be very fascist if they literally shut down the press and then took over and did like what's going on in Venezuela. That's not what I am championing here. That's not what I'm asserting. What I am asserting is that the states can literally hold their press accountable for objective journalism. It's time we no longer allow, and you got to understand that if all 50 states actually had journalistic standards and made sure that these news agencies weren't grinding agendas in anti-gun and pro-homosexual and so forth and so on, and they were literally objective, giving you just the facts so that you can understand what's going on and both sides of the story or three sides, you know. As I learned a long time ago, when it comes down to a conflict between two, it's usually there's three sides to every story. There's his, hers, and then there's the facts. Because 9 times out of 10, people kind of make a little bit of polishing and use a little bit of license in trying to elaborate their side of the story. So what I am saying is that the states could literally start pressing on the press. And actually, I've said this before, and I'll repeat this because I truly believe there's merit in this. As the states and counties actually have jury duty, I believe that there's no reason why the counties and the states should actually have a jury duty, except instead of juries for a trial, bring in people and have them wade through the news agencies and reports and what have you to determine if all of the, so there's a panel of people that is not biased, right? Or actually you're going to have biases, but when you have a variety of people that are from different parts of the county or what have you, then there's a better chance that you have, you know, both ideologies at the table to ensure that the press is actually getting a rating. And then, so these juries or these panels rate the press on how objective they are. If they don't have a good passing grade, then they get labeled as a propaganda mill or an entertainment mill and not the press. So they actually could stand to lose some of their press privileges. So that when President Trump flies into Wyoming and Wyoming has limited their press because they've got a bunch of organ grinding, you know, agenda grinding presses, whether they be the newspaper and television and radio. And so there was only maybe one or two presses that scored really well because of their objective journalism. And it would be those that would be probably present and or allowed, maybe. It's up to the states, though. That's the whole thing. That's the beauty of this Republican form of government that we were given, that the states have the liberty to experiment and try things. And who knows, as one state actually starts forging a path through the snow, it makes it easier for other states to either follow or make some changes and cutting the corners and improving on that. That's the same thing with healthcare. If the states want to manage a healthcare system, if you got 50 states managing healthcare differently, eventually they'll all start following the improved processes and what have you that others have done and implemented and so forth. Wow, this is a big success over here. Let's try that there. That's what happens when you create, it's almost like a free market of government. And that's what it's supposed to be. That was the intent. That was the beauty of this. And so this has really, really become necessary. And I just say that because the press has literally become outright hostile and belligerent to leaders who support liberty, the Constitution, conservative values, and or Republican values. It doesn't matter if it's a federal person that they're poking in the eye. They do it everywhere. And my point is they shouldn't be doing that at all unless they're doing it objectively with everybody. But it becomes very obvious when you start reading the paper, and if you've read your local paper and you say, yep, we have a very tainted local paper, you're not alone. That's not uncommon. And as a matter of fact, Rockefeller in 1992 basically hailed the press and the newspapers and thank them for helping them further the New World Order, because that's exactly what he said. And I would recommend you go read his memoirs so that you could actually see it for yourself, because GR doesn't like to make those types of things up. I'm just trying to give you the facts. Now, I do have my biases, but I do give you the facts, and my biases are really towards individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And so I'm not here trying to lie and deceive you in trying to get you to, you know, buy into my agenda. That's not the case here at all. Now, there are, and I point it out all the time, there are lots of those people out there that actually practice the doctrine of Takya, where lying and deceit is the word of the day. I mean, that's what we do. It's okay to do that. Honor and integrity means nothing anymore. Now, I want to kind of get back into Wyoming and why it's so important, because I'm heading out there. And one of the things I'm going to be addressing and talking to them, and so anybody that's listening that's in Wyoming that's going to be there tomorrow and this whole weekend, you know, I'm literally posing it out there. If you look at our society, and if you kind of understand, our society is a reflection of our religion. In other words, the mores of society, you know, whether we're, you know, a enlightened society, because I've talked about this before. You can actually tell when a society is enlightened, because it applies self-discipline. It applies societal disciplines to where, you know, we have laws and standards, and, you know, even the draconian dress codes, heaven forbid people actually dress decently out in town, that people actually, you know, focus on, you know, contributing to society instead of taking from society. We live today in a debased society compared to the society that the framers lived in. And those, 50 years or 25 to 50 years after the framers created the Constitutional Republic, because that is about when the decay started to begin. That's when big government started stepping in right around the Civil War. Actually, it was the Civil War, and anybody will tell you that. And so when we look at the elements within society, you've got public servants, you've got organizations, you have the laws, you have the education system, you have religion, you also have the party, which is a part of the political process, and then you have the electorate, which is a big class of people. Now, there's the body of the electorate, and then there are voter blocks, right? Because we like breaking everybody down into, you know, factions and so forth. But overall, society literally has these elements that drive our mores. Now, if you remember, I've said this before, that religion was the driver of our mores because they're the ones that controlled education until about the 1850s. I believe the gentleman's last name was Mann, who went out and basically proposed this plan of nationalizing and basically having the state take over religion. And the churches were very quick to abdicate their responsibility because, guess what? They didn't have to spend money anymore in doing it. Well, the state's going to do that. Okay, great. Then all the money we get from our parishioners, we can keep. And so that took them quickly and even faster down this path of serving mammon. But the point is as the state at that point in time was non-denominational Christian, and they were all good people, the door was already open and there were already bad people in there manipulating things as we started seeing the communists penetrating and so forth. And our education system was quickly converted, literally from the 50s to by the end of that century, the 19th century or the 1890s, by the end of that century, religion was literally converted into a secular, godless religion. Or I should say education was converted, not religion. Our education system has literally been converted into preaching and teaching the ideologies of secularism. And so I know that's a mouthful, but I can back that up, and that's what I'm writing this executive summary on. But I'm at a hard break, so I'm going to have to cover some of this when we get back, and I'll get into some even more important information you need to know, so we'll be right back.
It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So as I was saying, our education system became the Sunday school for the National Secular Church. They literally have the corner on the market because instead of it being a Sunday school, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school. And so that actually occurred literally, you know, from, and it started injecting this secularism from the Scopes trial, from the Supreme Court, and so forth. I mean, all the evidence is there, and there have been plenty of books, and Mark Erbach wrote a book called Believe, and he was talking literally about how they have become godless. Well, they were godless long before that, and what he really was pointing out, the truth of what he was pointing out, was the fact of how the federal government was enforcing its doctrine to say, it will only be a secular doctrine, and you cannot teach God. It became actually anti-God, anti-Christ. Moreover, our societies and our mores for centuries and millennia, and actually going back thousands of years, we have been divided by two disparate ideologies. And I've been telling you about these ideologies, and they're very stark in how they are wired, how the people are wired. But bottom line, we're in a civil war, and we've been in a civil war. Every time people have injected or created a great society of liberty, we end up finding that there are those who, you know, permeate or actually penetrate and then permeate through the society in selling this concept of slavery or communism or statism, whatever you want to call it. Platonism is what I called it yesterday, because give Plato the credit. He's the guy that wrote it the first time. So let's just call it Platonism instead of communism. The fact of the matter is that if you understand a civil war, there are people who are trying to take control of government. Now, if you understand our framers, they did not create a government that could be controlled. They created a very limited government. It was very limited in scope, and so it could only be controlled a very little bit. And the worst governments that could be controlled the most would be the states, if the people literally took over the states and forced their ideology upon the state, like what's happening in California. Then, okay, you can actually watch that, you know, a state go down in flames. And I, you know, pardon the pun. But the fact of the matter is that the framers understood and actually gave us, or I should say, the divine hand of providence gave us almost a foolproof process of protecting us from having to slide into statism or Platonism. That we wouldn't have to be enslaved, that our liberties were literally protected as long as we applied a little effort. Now we've gone, you know, 200 years, a couple centuries plus of applying hardly any effort. And I can't say that, because if you look at how America has applied itself in liberating other countries and so forth, we have been champions of liberty throughout our history. Even up to our recent stuff in going on in SWA and going on in Asia and so forth with Afghanistan and all of that. I mean, we have been trying to be on the side and supporting liberty in a macro view. So it's not like we haven't been trying, but the American electorate, going back to those components of our society, the American electorate have become blind trusters of parties. So when I go back to this stack of, you know, components in our society, and that would be, again, the public servants, those elite people that make laws, the organizations that try to buy those people to get them to make favorable laws. Then there's the laws themselves. There's our education system, the party, the electorate, and the religion. Out of all of those, because the education system and religion, today their hands are tied. Most religions are 501c3s. And what that means is they can't talk politics. And I know Trump is trying to undo that, but the next progressive, because it's all unconstitutional anyway, the next progressive will come back and apply federal tyranny once again and take away the freedom of speech and the freedom of being able to say what you want at your own pulpit. Okay, so who and what in the grand scheme of things here actually is in the position and is the only entity in the position or factor in these factors I've listed that are capable of actually saving or putting us into a position of saving ourselves? That's the party. Because the party is the ideological group of people. And if you look at the Democrats, they're the subjugationists. That's why we go through this all the time. They are the subjugationists, the Platonists, and they want to compel us to and force us to live the life that they want us to live. And it's going to be better and we're going to be happy. Okay? But those of us on the liberty side want people to be free and allow an exchange of ideas and be able to say, no, that won't work. Empirical data proves that. And moving forward. But once we get enslaved, that's it. It's very hard to break those bounds. Ask Israel. I mean, it really took acts of God to save Israel. And I truly believe it was the divine hand of providence that saved America. Not even I believe that. The framers believe that. Washington kept on asserting that. So my point is if you look at the one organization that is ideologically wired, that can be ideologically wired in our country today, it is the party. You're not going to find businesses have gone completely sterile and or they've become completely biased. In other words, they are drilling and moving forward. And I'll give you another example in organizations, because there's a lot of conservative organizations out there like the NRA, like the Western Lands Group. There's a lot of good conservative organizations out there, but they're myopic. And as a matter of fact, Keith Broders turned me on to some people that were running the Western Lands out of Utah. I forget their names. But I called these guys, and they were brutally honest, because they told me that their focus and funding was literally to focus and fight in court on Western Lands issues and Western Lands issues alone. They weren't concerned with solving the entire problem, because that is how they maintain their relevance. relevance. I'm sorry, a little tongue-tied. My point is that all organizations try to have a focus and relevance, whether that be a union, whether that be like the NAACP, because when they actually obtain what they wanted to obtain or when they get there, then all of a sudden they don't have jobs anymore. And that is why there's, you know, really no desire in solving these problems. So many of these organizations, whether they be conservative, whether they be liberal or what have you, they're really not a part of the problem or a part of the solution. They're all a part of the problem. So my point is that the party is the only thing that is ideologically wired and set to actually attack something and capable of doing that. So you have the Republican Party, you have the Constitutional Party, and you have the Libertarian Party. They're the ones that are already kind of standing on the Constitution, and the people there believe in the Constitution. And I'll ask you this. Next time you get out on Google or next time, use DuckDuckGo, but use DuckDuckGo and go look at brands. You know, when we talk about brands on things, we talk about, you know, how people actually tattoo on their body a company brand. And Harley Davidson and Apple are probably the two largest tattoos on people's bodies. However, the largest tattooing on at least American bodies is a very patriotic tattoo. And ironically, it is not a party. It is the Constitution. And so that is a brand, right? Because people are branding themselves with the Constitution. That is where the Republican Party needs to go. They, you know, the Constitution Party does not have a monopoly because it's in their name that they are the party of the Constitution. No, any party can do this. And I'm hoping that eventually the Democrats will start coming to, and they will start getting it too, and they will actually kick the communists out. They will start actually working and trying to create this merger and acquisition. I know that people want to maintain these separations, but keep this in mind. The Federalists, when they were taken out by the Republicans almost had no opposition by the time Monroe became president. It was pretty well noted that nobody was really challenging Monroe. And, you know, from him and even John Quincy Adams was the very beginning of a new rising party. And that party was the Democratic Party. And so it was the Democratic Party that unseated John Quincy Adams when the Federalists and these Platonists started working together again. But it has happened in American history that we actually homogenized, or we actually became a very homogeneous party type of system where the entire people of the United States were united on the principles of republicanism. And that went from Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and then James Monroe. And then with John Quincy Adams, it started diverting. And like I said, that's where the new party rose to take over. So it took a while for them to finally get back, but there was really very little. Once Jefferson won that very contested first election against Adams, it became easier and easier and easier. Like I said, America can do this. We've done this before, and it's just a matter of getting the parties to start focusing, like I said, on the Constitution, and then getting them in control of their members, and then getting them teeth to control their members. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. I hope you enjoyed the Thanksgiving show tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.